It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Another great episode. It's our Pirate preview. And the Pirates are taking on the Old Dominion Monarchs. A big victory for them over, what was that team in Blacksburg? Virginia Tech. Oh, yeah. So we're starting off tonight, and we've got our usual suspects, Kyle from McGrane's Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, David? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and also we have with us tonight another partner in crime, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
What's up, guys? It's good to be with you. I'm looking forward to talking some Pirate football. I'm looking forward to getting back to Greenville on Saturday.
Yeah, and so we've got a big night tonight, as always. And I tell you what, with us right now, a very special guest on the line from Richlands, North Carolina, Eric Graham, who played with Coach Logan, Coach John Thompson, and Skip Holtz. Eric, what's up, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. Looking forward to chatting with you guys tonight.
Absolutely. Want to bring you on. And overall, we want to get your thoughts. I know you were with Patrick Johnson on 94.3 The Game, the pregame. And we'll talk to Patrick later on the show. But we wanted to bring you in. And out of the gate, I just want to get your thoughts, your insights, if you will, for the 2018 season so far with the Pirates.
Well, so far, I mean, we're 1-2. We dodged a bullet in Virginia Tech due to the storm. I feel like we have a lot of potential. I feel like we can move forward. I think starting the season off against A&T being a really, really good team on their level, and that team playing in the extra games towards the end of their season, their playoffs and everything, to where they got extra practices and their championship caliber team on their level. So them coming up to play against us, who are, I mean, technically undefined, we didn't know who we were. For them coming in and beating us, I felt like that was kind of a learning tool for us. You improve your best from week one to week two, which we saw when we beat the brakes off of Carolina. So, I mean, it's always a good thing to beat Carolina, and I hope we continue to beat them in the future.
So you think it's a winning season already with one win, right?
I mean, well, sometimes it's like that. I mean, as far as the coaches go, I'm sure they want to win more, as well as the players. But as a fan and a former player, and being from the state of North Carolina and happened to be recruited by Carolina and choosing East Carolina over Carolina, it's always a good time to beat them. So moving forward, hopefully we got a chance. I mean, we played strong this past weekend. A couple miscues kind of threw it off for us a little bit, but I think we can bounce back. I feel like we're going to have a good week of practice where we can come out against ODU, and I feel like ODU might have won their Super Bowl this past Saturday, so maybe they might come in a little flat, and hopefully we can take advantage of that. So hopefully we continue to get some more wins under our belt.
A big night, certainly with the Pirates. We need, I hate to use the term must win, but Eric, don't you think this is a must win if we want to go to a bowl in December?
Absolutely. We really need to win. I mean, it's a must-win one, because if you go back to preseason, I'm pretty sure almost everybody that follows the Pirates pretty close and looked at that initial schedule said that's a game we should win or we hope to win. So we've already lost one of those games that we probably deemed that we should win, which was week one. So let's see if we can get past ODU and continue to make this thing 500, move forward. I mean, last time we were 500 at any point of the season.
That's very true. And if we can somehow go 500, which would be 2-2, would be a nice feat for the Pirates and certainly a great start to 2018. And, Kyle, what do you think? You think that the Pirates are going to win on Saturday?
I think it's a must win. I'm concerned about the quarterback situation if Reed can't go. You know, I don't know how much of the offense Holton has learned yet beyond the running aspect. My fear is if Reed can't go, that they're going to stack the box. ODU's run defense doesn't look very good, but if we can't throw it, then they just stack the box and we'll see what happens. But, you hope Reed can go and, we'll be able to get something going in the passing game and have a balanced offense. Yeah, but as far as the game, yeah, it's a must-win. If we're going to do anything this season in terms of trying to get to a bowl, you got to beat Old Dominion. We would be 2-2. Looking at things, we should really, you know, be 3-1. But beat Old Dominion, you're 2-2. The defense is playing lights out so far. Coach Blackwell is doing a hell of a job. And if the quarterback situation keeps developing. Reed keeps getting better. Holton keeps learning more of the offense. But we got a chance this year. Because when you have a good defense, you're going to be in a lot of games. So there'll be chances for more wins. But, yeah, this is a must win. And I think we'll find a way to get it. I do. I think there's a little bit of excitement for this game. There seems to be a little bit of buzz with us beating Carolina, then playing well against South Florida, and Old Dominion beating Virginia Tech. There seems to be a little bit of buzz in the air. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a bigger crowd this weekend than we did against Carolina. We only had around 39,000 for Carolina. I would expect ODU to bring quite a few fans down from Norfolk coming off of that Virginia Tech win.
I'm going to guess, Mr. Prediction on the crowd. I think it's going to be, I'll go with attendance of, I'll say around 43,000.
Yeah, 43. That would be bigger than Carolina.
Yep. That's I'm going to go with. I agree with you. I think that there'll be Pirate fans, and then I think ODU will bring a few thousand, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 fans. I really do. But that's fine.
Brought a big crowd the first time down here.
Yeah, they did. Back in 2013. Eric, as far as
we didn't get Bubba's thoughts.
Well, Bubba, what do you think?
I think when you take a look at this matchup, this is one, like you guys, I believe, have mentioned. And so before the season, there was one, if we're going to get the six that you said we had to get, and I still feel that way, maybe not quite as much as I did after seeing how we performed defensively, but it's certainly one that would be good to get if we're going to go bowling, that's for sure. And then, like you guys said, I certainly agree that as far as the attendance is likely to surpass that of the North Carolina game. I know 5 years ago when we had ODU come to Dowdy Ficklin and we had just under 45,000 or so, and of course their fan base is going to be jacked up and attending this game in large numbers, I feel certain making that drive down from Norfolk.
That helps us out a lot because at the end of the day, we need to be selling football tickets, right, Eric? I mean, that's been one of the things that really hurt us is when you're not doing well, then all of a sudden, unfortunately, there is some fair weather fans and some casual fans or maybe fans that come to see the matchups of whoever, maybe an ACC school or team like a regional rival like or a game like ODU. If you're not playing well, they're not going to come on Saturday.
Unfortunately, that's the case. I mean, trust me, when everybody looks back and they talk bad about the team, about not winning over the past couple of years, it resonates with me well. My teams were worse than that my second and third year. We were worse than any of the coach most seasons so far. So having fans still come out and support, regardless of the amount, is still beneficial. I mean, even if we have 25, 35, 45,000, whoever's there, be loud, be proud, celebrate when it's time to celebrate, and encourage when it's time to encourage, and the players will feed off of that as much as they possibly can. I mean, I really hope for a big crowd. I actually used to work literally next door to Old Dominion University, so we used to bump elbows occasionally. If I was to go get lunch, I'd be out there with some of the students, and I remember a few years back, I got to talk a little trash to them when the Pirates beat them. So, you know, they have a good fan base, and I do believe they're pretty jacked up. I mean, after beating Virginia Tech, starting 0-3 and coming and beat, were they 0-3? Whatever their record was, you know, coming out and beating Virginia Tech, they believe that they can beat us. I mean, technically, if you look on paper, Virginia Tech's supposed to be better than us. History will say that to a certain extent. So they're going to believe that they can beat us, just like A&T came in and, you know, they believed that they could, and they did. So hopefully our guys can understand that we need to beat them. I'm sure ODU looked at their schedule and probably put us down as a team that they should beat, as we did the same to them.
And, you know, Eric, that's what UNC thought, but they didn't. They didn't beat us. So that's the thing we've got to come out with. I want to ask you, as far as the offensive side of the ball, with a quarterback play, what do you think? Do you think Reed – it looks like he's going to be able to go. And one thing I want to mention, guys, is that even if Reed Herring, if his foot is hurt, if he's playing hurt, there's a big difference. I wanted you to talk about this, Eric. There's a big difference between a football player playing hurt versus injured.
If we all play hurt over the course of the season.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, being hurt is literally that word, it hurts. You might need to put some ice on it or whatever the case may be. You might need an ibuprofen after the game. Being injured, meaning something that's going to sideline you, potentially harm your career, or put you out. Something that's hurting is 1 to 2 to 3 weeks can still heal while you're playing. A true injury, you're going to sit out. I mean, as an offensive lineman, it's a little bit different. And a lot of people don't understand that, but offensive linemen normally have the most reps per season. Mm-hmm. If you're a starter, you normally play the most amount of plays per season because offensive line doesn't rotate like a defensive line. Linebackers, DBs, wide receivers, running backs, and occasionally quarterbacks can come out now. So then offensive line lines up for every field goal. You know what I mean? So a lot of people don't realize offensive linemen, we don't rotate in and out, so we play a lot of plays. And a lot of times they do play hurt. And sometimes it affects the play, but honestly, a hurt player that's a starter might be better than a healthy player that doesn't know everything that they need to be doing. So playing hurt and playing injured, there is a major difference. So if he's just playing hurt, he should be okay. You hate to risk it becoming an injury. I would love to see Kingsley play. Some reason, something just keeps going around in my head saying that if he gets in the game, he's going to make a spark. And for some reason, I don't know why, but I just keep having that feeling.
Well, you and David need to get together and chit chat about that.
Well, you beat me to it, Eric. I have, since Saturday night, it's been bothering me after the game, not because of the play of Reed or Holton, so let me make that very clear, but the fact of when Reed had that injury in the game, it started in the second quarter, it started bothering me. Oh my God, what if he goes down? You know, we need, I was just worried about that situation. Plus, I think Effetti's a great athlete, and I would like to see him get some playing time. So I know you can't have three quarterbacks playing a game or anything like that, but I'm just worried about.
Why can't you? We did it. Paul Charles, Desmond Robinson, and James Pinkney played in the game before.
They did? Okay, there you go.
Yeah, Southern Miss, South Florida.
It was one of them. It definitely happened. I remember.
Yeah. I remember it too. James Pinkney was the best of the three. I could tell that. I went to the JV game. They were playing, John Thompson had a JV team. We were playing against Hargrave. And I watched the game. I said, James Pinkney's our best quarterback. Why isn't he starting? And he didn't start until Holt got here.
Yeah,
not true. I'm sorry. He started 2004. Dez graduated after 2013, after 2003, or was he?
He did not. He just didn't. John Thompson made the quarterback change and ended up playing James Moore, and then James kind of beat him out, and then we played the 2004 season, and Dez was the main backup.
Yeah, that's
Paul Troff. Him and Paul Troff were the backup quarterbacks at the time for James Pinkney.
James Pinkney was by far the best quarterback of the three. James Pinkney was a warrior, man. I remember in that 2004 season, and I know, Eric, you were part of that offensive line. So no negativity towards you, but good God, James Pinkney took a beating. I remember that Louisville game. I felt sorry for him.
Oh, my God. That was a rough one. See, and I'm not going to talk bad about my former teammates by any means, but there were some that weren't as loyal to the team that ended up transferring out that came in, and they were highly touted, and they did not live up to their hype whatsoever. I mean, I remember that game up in Louisville, and I had to play right tackle that week because the other player – I'm not going to say names. If anybody looks it up, that's up to them. But he couldn't get into a right-handed stance, so he had to play left. You know, so I had to move to the right. And we were just teeing off on James. I mean, the linebacker, I can't remember his name, number 97. I remember that. He literally was freelance linebacker. Like, when he chose the blitz, he chose the blitz. It wasn't like they had sets or anything like that. You know, and to toot my own horn, I did great out of 97% that game. But, you know, they had a very good team. I mean, they had a very good team. Elvis Dumerville was rushing. They had a solid linebacking core. You know, so they were really good. But James Pinkney was third on the depth chart. He came in and gave us any little bit of spark and took over the future. Why can't Kingsley do that?
Well, you know, he could. He could. I just my thought was Saturday night against South Florida, we were in a 13-13 ball game at the time, and David was like, why don't we try playing Kingsley? I said, because we're in a 13-13 ball game. If we put in a quarterback that hadn't touched the ball on the really at all in meaningful snaps in a game that's 13-13, I'm going to lose my mind. that was my thought.
I understand that, but the Cardinals did it the other night.
You mean Arizona? I don't watch NFL,
yeah,
so you
yeah, guys, yeah, 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 yeah. Arizona Cardinals did it the other night. I mean. When he put the guy in the last 4 minutes of the game. I just feel like Kingsley, with his ability to run, he has a chip on his shoulder right now, being that freshman is playing over him.
Yep.
100%.
But what would be interesting to me, if he does have a good grasp of the passing offense, he does give you the running threat that Holton gives you, maybe not to that degree, but he gives you a running threat that Reed doesn't. So if he could run some zone read, then that would give you the ability to give you a true passing threat with a quarterback that can run it. Because right now, it's obvious Holton hasn't learned the passing offense yet. Because you know clearly they hadn't had him thrown it, but what, three times? So Holton's not ready to go out there and execute the passing game yet. So if Kingsley has a good grasp of it with his mobility, that could be more effective for us than Reed, because the ability to pull it down.
You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Eric, the bottom line is we're about winning games, right?
And that's all it's about. That's all it's about. And, you know, and at the end of the day, I sit back and I look at the quarterback situation, and a lot of people give Holton a lot of credit for being able to run compared to what his high school stats were. But it's completely different now. The linebackers are as fast, if not faster than you. Well, in high school, I mean, he was humongous playing against the people he played against.
Yeah, but
you
he's,
know?
Still physical. He's still
a
physical runner.
I'm not saying he's not, but there's a difference between a 16, 17-year-old trying to tackle a man that's amongst boys in high school versus a 22-year-old that's trying to make it to the next level hitting you. So it's a difference. And especially when you know it's just a run game and you're not worried about him passing that much, you're going to be on your toes ready to go attack a lot faster.
Definitely.
And I believe that if we would have played the game last week against Virginia Tech, I think the talent level on the Virginia Tech defense really would have, like, not say humbled him, but would have said, all right, I'm playing college football now. Not saying the first few weeks didn't do that. But everybody knows that Virginia Tech normally has some beasts on defense. Such as South Florida as well. I'm not saying they don't. But I just feel like Kingsley, with the ability to move the pocket and throw the ball and have to pull it down and run if he had to, and this might be a stretch, so don't laugh at me, but it might be a bit of a stretch, but he could be just as talented if he gets an opportunity as someone such as Pat White, because he's built the same as him. You know, he might not have the talent at the round in the same way as Pat White might have, but he can run around and throw the ball on a run, and he has to know the passing game better than Hope. Has to.
Right. I'm just curious as why he didn't win the starting job. You know what I mean? If that's the case. But no, I'll tell you this much. I can guarantee you if Reed doesn't play this weekend, if his ankle's still bothering him, I can guarantee you we'll see Kingsley. Because of the fact that Holton does not know the passing game yet. So Kingsley will get a chance this weekend if Reed's injured.
Another point to make is I'm hearing, Eric, I don't know, you're closer to the program than we are, being a former player. I was told today, and I won't say who it was, but is it true that Reed can't even put weight on his – I mean, that's the question I have is, can he put weight on his foot? Because I heard he couldn't. Is it a situation like Kyle and I were talking before we called you, Eric, of where it's just like it's sore and it hurts, or is it like really an injury that they're trying to kind of – like cover up and not people let people know how bad it really is?
Well, definitely they're gonna hide that for the longest part of the week. The later
right.
part of the week, they're not gonna say anything about it until later part. Right. I do believe that he might have. I'm not a doctor. I don't want to say he has this type of injury or that type of injury, but you can't put weight on something. That's normally an injury.
because, I mean, if it's a high ankle sprain or if it's a sprain of the foot, those things don't heal up that easy. You know, it's just treatment is the best way to go, and we'll see. Like you said, we'll honestly see the first time if he plays, the first time he drops back and plants throws or has to run away, it'll tell us everything.
Montgomery seemed pretty adamant that he thought he was going to play this weekend unless it's just all for show, you know, and he actually thought he was going to practice today and seemed disappointed that he couldn't. So I don't know. That could be all for show. You know, who knows? We'll know tomorrow because if he can't practice tomorrow, Montgomery said he ain't playing. So.
And that'd be reporting this Tuesday night.
Those practice reps would be good for both guys, Holden and for Kingsley. Those practice reps are good. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to go good on good to give those guys good reps, ones-on-ones or ones-on-twos, not so much scout team, just to get the full-speed looks that they'll need. And obviously they'll scale it back a little bit until we figure out who can open the offense up a little bit during the course of the game, for sure, if it's not Reed in the game. But I definitely believe that for the season, it might be somewhat smart to sit Reed simply because he is our best option right now, believe it or not. He's our best option until Kingsley or Houghton gets to prove that they can pass the ball.
Well, I was going to ask
anybody, Bubba, this might be a good question for you, being you're from that area and you coached high school ball. How was Nfetti as a passer in high school? We all know he was a good runner. What kind of arm did he have?
Of course, I've never had the opportunity to see him play in person. I did see a lot of his highlights and that kind of thing. Of course, those are just that, highlights, so I didn't see the negative plays in there. But, I mean, he was certainly an effective passer in high school, but at the same time, like Eric said earlier, in terms of other aspects of the game, I mean, this certainly being an effective high school passer doesn't necessarily transition to the college level by any stretch of the imagination. So I know it's been well documented as far as the tightening up of his throw motion since he's arrived on campus. So and by all accounts, and with that and then the work he's done in the film room, he's developing and progressing to where he needs to be in order to be our starting quarterback.
Who could throw the better deep ball, him or Houghton?
Kingsley.
Kingsley's got the better deep ball.
I haven't seen him enough to say, but
yeah, a lot of his highlights are like roll out and throw deep type of stuff. So I believe he could throw the deep ball better. Cool. But
yeah, the reason I ask that is because I just got a feeling ODU is going to stack the line. If they know Reed's not in there, they're going to stack that line of scrimmage and. There's gonna be some stuff open on the back end.
And that I was gonna ask you, Eric, when you brought up a great point about as far as Old Dominion is concerned, and you have a situation with Reed. If he's, let's say he's just hurt, okay, he's just hurt. It's not really a injury, but you also run the risk of, which I know it's football and it's part of the game, of he could be so injured. I mean, he could be hurt, but then. All of a sudden you put him in there and then he gets hurt where it's a season-ending injury or he could be even more serious where he's out a few weeks. Is that something that they should be concerned? I mean, I know it's a concern, but even more than normal?
I would say it should be. I mean, like you guys noticed, we have not established a true second quarterback. So that makes Reed that much more important because we don't have the second. And, with that being said, I mean, I'm not trying to discredit Old Dominion, but they should be a lesser of opponent. I hate to say that, but like I said, it should be due to the history and the programs and how long they've been around. We should be better than them. So if you want to sit someone out, maybe it should be someone like against Old Dominion versus it being against the teams in our conference that we really have to focus on. Indeed, I mean, we got some good teams we got to play later on in the year, and you would hope that home field advantage could give us a chance to play a second team quarterback and get by the fact that we are home. We're playing a team that's coming off of a big time win, so maybe they come in flat. maybe to give the chance for a backup to come in, feed off of the crowd, feed off of the fact that we played well last week, and feed off of the opportunity to the first start maybe, and maybe get by with that victory, and then heal up Reeves, give him a week to heal up a little bit.
Guys, something else to take into consideration along these lines, and as far as the quarterback situation, they could very well receive the benefit of the ground attack this week. And, of course, our ground attacks come along nicely, but 220 against UNC, and then right at 150, 160 against South Florida. And then so this week we're going against an ODU defense that gave up 315 yards against Virginia Tech on the ground. So hopefully we can get that ground attack established once again, and then that would take the load off of Kingsley should he be the starter this week.
Yeah, the ODU's run defense isn't very good, but like I said, if we don't have a passing threat, they're just going to stack, just gonna stack lines.
Right.
And do you blame them? I mean,
that's what I do. Yeah. That's what I would do. If Reed's not playing, I would take the line of scrimmage and say, until, you know, hopefully we can prove them wrong and beat them over the top if they do that with either Kingsley or Holton. But if I really think that if Reed can go and then that threat of the pass is there, we should have a big day running the ball on ODU. My fear with Old Dominion is, you know, speaking of third-string quarterbacks, that's what they did this past Saturday. They brought in their third-string quarterback and off the bench, and he's who lit Virginia Tech up. And that's my fear, is this kid has found a second life. He started a couple years ago and then put up very big numbers and been riding the pine, and now he gets a chance to start again and for coming off the bench and play three quarters and lit Virginia Tech up. And now I'm scared he's going to keep lighting it up. But hopefully not. Hopefully he just had the game of his life this past Saturday, and it'll be back to reality this week.
I was just going to ask you, Eric, and the guys, isn't it possible that we're seeing some gamesmanship? Maybe, and I don't want to speculate, so I'm not speculating here, but I'm just asking from a gamesmanship point of view. If, say that Reed is really hurt where he can't play, isn't it possible they're getting Kingsley and Holton ready so that it'll be like that very thing where you'll see where Kingsley could potentially play the game of his life and all of a sudden really spark the team?
That's what I believe. That's definitely what I believe. I mean, you keep it quiet and you don't name the starter until the day of. I've seen that happen before. You know, you don't name a starter until the morning of. Normally most teams take a test Friday night. A lot of people don't know the Friday night routines where the teams go stay off in the hotel. You have your meetings, you have meals, you have more meetings, you have meals, you have a snack, you have more meetings. And in the morning, you normally have a test that you have to take over the basic coverages that you should see, what calls should be made here or there, where should this ball be thrown, who should you block, what changes should we make in the scheme based on this alignment, what blitzes do they bring, what is this player known to do. So you have little handwritten tests that you got to answer. And literally those tests, I've seen dictate who's going to start. By the time we get on the bus to leave the hotel to head to the field, is when the coaches are grading these tests, and we get in the locker room, hey, you're starting because you passed the test. A lot of college football, all of these people in college football are talented. Yes, there are some elite, but everybody's the best player off of their high school team, and they just basically make a melting pot at the university. So then the biggest part that's the difference is the mental aspect, knowing what to do makes the biggest difference, because if you know what you're doing, guess what you can do? You can perform at the highest level. If you guys ask me to set up this call and record this call, guess what? We'll still be trying to figure it out right now. But that's what you guys know how to do. You know what I mean? But if you ask me how to mic a linebacker and how to chip up to the next level, or how to make a hot call and pick out behind and block somebody, that's what I know how to do. So there's certain things that everybody knows how to do better. And once you learn the offensive, defensive schemes in college, and you're already an athlete, we all lift weights, we all train, the mental part is the difference maker. If you can get that down, get hit in the mouth, and still keep your mental toughness, then you can be elite in college.
Well, I would also say that there's times we may come across that we don't know what we're doing, Eric, when, even the things that we're supposed to know what we're doing. So
I agree.
We do the best. We have better days than others.
Yeah.
As far as Old Dominion, is there anything that you're seeing ahead of time, Eric, that people should be aware of that I know that you're being a former player, speaking of experience, you maybe see things that we don't?
I watch the game completely different than everybody else. I watch the alignment. I watch the personnel. I watch who's coming in, who's coming out. I watch the stances from the D-line. There's so much little keys that you can see and kind of guess what's going to – not even say guess, but take an educated guess of what's going to happen. You know, several times I'm sitting in the stands and I might say, hey, they're doing this, and the fan beside them, man, how do you know this is about to happen? So you kind of just see it down the distance, those things. They're worried about what we're going to do in offense, but we still need to worry about tackling those running backs they have.
And as far as their wide receivers, too, I mean, they've got some talented wide receivers, I know, for – Old Dominion, that area of, you know, Eric, I wanted to mention to folks that don't know, that may be listening across the country, that area of Virginia in particular is an incredible high school football area. So they've got tremendous athletes that are, some of them are staying home and playing for the local university in Old Dominion versus coming to East Carolina or Virginia Tech or Virginia. They're staying home. Not all of them, but some of them are.
Yeah, they got great talent skill position. There ain't no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, and then a lot, and like you said, a lot of the guys that went off somewhere else ended up coming back that were from Norfolk area. I mean, the 757 is rich with talent. I mean, we've had our fair share at ECU. So watching high school football there, and some of our former ECU players are coaching high school ball there now, watching their highlights and stuff that they put on social media of their teams, they have legit ballers in high school there. And like you said, a lot of them are going to go to ODU because simply a lot of them love the HBCU feel. You have that at Norfolk State, but they might not want to play at the Norfolk State level, but they want to be right down the street from Norfolk State. You know, a lot of these guys, their parents went to Norfolk State or Hampton or Howard. A lot of these HBCUs that are in the 757 Tidewater area sort of, instead of playing for those schools because they're a little bit smaller, they still want to be on the Division I level, they'll go to ODU and play and still be close to family.
And that's important when you have 25. What is that stadium for ODU? Is it 25,000?
Yeah,
it's around 22, I believe.
Yeah, because they were, I mean, that place was rightfully so tremendous. As far as the running game, Eric, I want to get your take on, I wanted to ask you earlier, and I just realized I forgot. What is your take so far, being that you're, speaking of experience on the offensive line, or how do things look? We have a new coach with Don Mahoney. You think things are improved this year?
I love offensive linemen, and I hate being so critical. But we still have a lot of improvement to do. And honestly, there's certain technique things that I see that I'm not a fan of. I feel like when you have a zone run game, where you're trying to create two double teams on the play side and have a backside cutoff and, you know, you're trying to get up to the linebackers, stuff like that. I feel like you have to take good splits between each lineman to pre-generate a hole. You have to be able to pre-generate the hole by getting a split, but I feel like we stand on top of one another. So when we do get a double team, when we don't get a push, now we've clogged that thing up more than what it should be. But if we can pre-generate the gaps and get a two-foot split, we'll be so much better. And, I mean, that's just my belief as an offensive lineman. I mean, if you watch guys in the NFL, they're not standing on top of one another. To get off on the ball means so much, and I feel like our guys don't get off the ball in the run game enough. Like, I feel like they're reading and then stepping versus taking their first step, reading and then being aggressive as all get out and finishing your blocks. You have to finish your blocks. You have to throw somebody in the dirt sometime and fall on top of them and then push them back down again and run the risk of a 15-yard penalty. You got to let these people know that you're here to play ball. I'm trying to stay calm. I'm getting hyped up over here right now thinking about it. But you have to be able to get them out of there. Throw them out of the club is what we call it. You have to get them out of there. Finish your block. Stop helping them back up when you knock them down. I mean, there's so many little other dirty things you're supposed to do that I'm not going to say on the radio to incriminate myself. But you have to be willing to be nasty.
Give us that segment.
I was talking about this the other day. We were talking about how we weren't getting any penalties thrown on us, and I said, sometimes I think that's one of the most overrated things in college football, being one of the most least penalized. Being so, people act like it's so good not to get penalties. You don't want to get penalties, but sometimes when you're not getting penalties, it means you're not being dirty. It means you're not playing with emotion. You're not playing with an edge. You're not playing with a chip. Because, you know, there's stupid penalties, and then there's aggression penalties. And what you're talking about is being down and dirty, hard-nosed, and being aggressive. And sometimes that's going to cause you to get penalties. If you ain't holding, you ain't trying.
You ain't lying. and the thing is, it's like you have to, like, you literally have to put your hand on the throat. You got to get that hand in that face mask sometimes. Yes, they might call legal hands to the face, but he is going to slow down that next play. I promise you that. If there was a way to get Scotty Robinson on the phone, a former defensive lineman, probably one of the best defensive linemen that's played here at ECU, he's underrated because he played with Jay Ross, Linval Joseph, and C.J. Wilson. But a lot of people don't understand how much Scotty disrupted to make those guys look good. Him and Zach Slate did a lot of work. And going against Scotty when he was a freshman, Scotty was fast. He was a small guy. I grabbed Scotty's face mask, throat, nose, eyes, every other play. And for Scotty to come back and tell me down the road, I appreciate you doing that because it taught me how to be a little bit more aggressive and keep my face out of stuff. You know what I'm saying? So if you can do that, it gets people out of their character. If I scratch you in your eye and it's not called, what are you going to do? Complain to the ref. Now you're huffing and puffing, you're mad, and you're going to lose all technique that you're supposed to have, and now we're going to run a reach run play, and you're trying to tee off on me, and I just reached you, and now I'm outside of you. Now you're looking stupid. And that's what we need to do to get people out of this fight. Be aggressive. Be aggressive. I mean, at the end of the day, that's all it's about. Finish your blocks, throw them in the ground, get their uniform dirtier than yours, you know, and anything else that you need to do in between that, I'm not going to say. But whatever it is you feel like you need to do to get this person out of character, please do it so they can get their retaliation. That's a 15 yards for us. That's just as good. And now they're going to play soft because they just got a 15-yard penalty. It's a mind game.
Did Coach Shank coach any of these techniques you're speaking of, Eric?
I plead the fifth.
So, Eric, as far as the running game is concerned, what do you see? What do you like so far this year? What are you maybe the things, opportunities that we can improve on?
We have to finish. At the end of the day, the proving on is the finishing. We have to finish our runs. We have to finish our blocks. We have to get to the second level. We have to get to the second level. The scheme is there. The scheme, Coach Mo, whoever's calling the plays, has an excellent scheme for the running game. Now it's on those guys that are in the actual helmet and shoulder pads. It's on them. Because I know they're coaching it. I've been to practice. I know they're coaching. Get off on the second level. We have to do that. I'm excited about the running game because we've had spurts where it looks great. But to be honest, when you show a replay and I watch the linebacker trip trying to scrape over and we break for a run, what would have happened if he didn't trip? Now that's part of the game. I understand that. I get it. But we don't have anybody that's an eraser. You date back and you have a Chris Johnson that was running the ball, and he had probably one of the least experienced offensive lines in front of him, but he has that senior year that he has with a bunch of young guys in front of him because he erased a lot of mistakes. Coach Shank used to preach it all the time. You got to have an eraser. You look at these SEC school running backs and things like that, but then you really don't see their offensive linemen go pro because those players were so talented is that they erase the mistakes of the people in front of them because they were just that talented. Just what it is what it is. It's okay. We're going to do it. We have to do it by committee. That's fine. But we just need to be able to finish our runs, run with the purpose, and block with the purpose, and just carry it on out. I mean, that's just what we have to do. Got to be aggressive. Do something dirty. Give me a 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty. Please give me one of those.
Yeah, I really wish we would have gotten, and I won't get too much in on this, but I really wish we would have gotten Coach Shankweiler back in here. From what I understand, he reached out, and maybe this is an untrue rumor, but he was at NC State this past season as an offensive analyst, and I heard he reached out to Coach Montgomery about coming back, and it just didn't happen, and now he's at JMU.
We know that for a fact. That is true.
Yeah, I really wish Montgomery would have brought him back in here, but he's up at JMU, and hopefully Coach Shank and Donnie Kirkpatrick are having fun together up at JMU.
I was just going to ask you with the running game itself, when I just don't believe when people are critical about, I've heard that from fans, which I think is unfortunate, about the running backs by committee. I think it's nice the fact that we have a lot of talent at running back. I mean, any one of those guys could legitimately start. Maybe Trace Christian's a little bit young, being a redshirt freshman. But all, I mean, the other, when you have Anthony Scott, you've got Darius Penix, and you have Hassan Howell. I mean, all three of those guys right now are, to me, some of the best backs we've had in a while.
Running back by committee is good, but you still need to have that significant number one, that guy that just stands out. He's just number one. And I don't have an issue with it. Maybe go split back and put two of them in the game at a time. And maybe run some misdirection, hand one off to here, there, whatever you need to do. Maybe put the running quarterback in and put two backs in the backfield. Let's go too tight and let's see what we can come up with. So I like that idea, things like that. But I do believe you have to establish a number one, because running back is not a position where you can go and get three plays the first half and then you expect me to be great in the fourth quarter. You're running and taking a hit. You have to get a little, as Coach Shank would say, you got to get nized up a little bit. You got to get a little bit of that little sweat, someone else's sweat flying in your face, your sweat flying in their face. You got to get juiced up a little bit, and it might take more than one, two runs and then take me out. I'm not a huge fan of it, playing four and five running backs. I'm not. Maybe three at the most, but two should get significant more time than that third one. That's just my personal opinion. When I played, we went with Brandon Fractious. Chris Johnson got some, and then occasionally we'll bring in Brandon Simmons. And that's just what we rolled with. But the four and five backs, I'm not a huge fan of it.
What I always say is, you know, and I watch Darius Penix of the three, he would be my favorite. I watch him and I'm like, damn, leave him in, let him get lathered up is what I call it. And I want to see, you know, I'm with you. I'd like to see a primary back and then the other two use situational football. But it seems right now, and I do think we have three backs that all three should get significant playing time, but I'm with you 100%. We do need to have a primary back that gets the majority of the carries.
I believe that should be Scott or Howe. Penix, I believe if our blocking was better, I believe Penix would be great. But Scott has the best ability to erase mistakes.
I get what you're saying because he's got speed. I like the way Penix is physical, and I get what you're saying because the offensive line with you, we need somebody that can make things happen on his own. I can see that Scott should get the majority of the carries.
And Penix is more like a fullback, right? I mean, he's such a big bruiser, and he's my kind of back anyway. But they're using him on short yardage, third downs, it seems like. But any of those three certainly can. I think Trace Christian is certainly early. I don't think he's quite ready. I don't know. Maybe that's I haven't really seen him play as much as the other guys, obviously. But he hasn't played it since the first game, if my memory serves me right, right?
I don't think he's touched the ball since he fumbled it in the red zone against A&T.
Yeah. What about I tell you what, guys, we've got let's get our couple guests in, and we'll come right back. We'll start off with a guy that you know very well, Eric. I think you know him, Patrick Johnson. And let's go to Patrick right now. Glad to have our next guest, Patrick Johnson. He is now back on the game. 94.3 The Game in the afternoon, the Patrick Johnson Show. PJ, so great to catch up with you, man.
Hi, Dave.
So awesome. In fact, we were just talking. It's hard to believe that our relationship has lasted more than some of my other relationships, but I guess that's another podcast.
That's the funniest thing you've said in the 20 years I've known you. That was funny.
Yeah, exactly. That's a Dr. Phil show, I guess I'll have to do or something. But I wanted to bring you on to welcome you back to Greenville. We want to give you some time to get settled in, so to speak. And, man, you've been tremendous for folks that haven't listened to you. I don't know why they wouldn't. But 94.3 The Game, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and obviously, if you're like me and you have to work during that time, then with my real job, then
You can, I know people can listen to you on SoundCloud. So, the best of the Patrick Johnson Show, which is kind of like a podcast after the fact, which that's where.
No, it's actually the whole show. We leave.
Oh,
all, we don't. Yeah, we don't take the. If we were looking for the best stuff, it'd be a short podcast. But we no all the bad all the screw ups. They're all in there. It's like the band that plays its own music. You know, there's no backing track here. All the wrong notes, they're in there.
The good, the bad, the ugly, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah.
I wanted to bring you on because obviously you're close to the team. You and I have been following the team for a long, long time, being East Carolina, proud alum and all, and you. And I wanted to get your take on so far with the season, and maybe we can just kind of freestyle about the Pirates so far and whatever you want to talk about is fine with me.
Well, I think, Dave, the interest, you know, back, you go back 20 years ago, and it was sort of one radio entity, which you and I both worked for, and it was Henry Hinton's group, and what a service he did for East Carolina to bring it really good coverage and continual coverage, kind of brought that WCHL, Chapel Hill model.
Right.
That spawned so many really good radio people. I mean, when people listen to the radio network, David Horn, who's the engineer.
Oh my God, yeah.
David is a WCHL alum and learned to do this the right way. And look, I'm no Tar Heel fan, but I always thought their network and Woody Durham were like the gold standard of how stuff should be done. And even in our pregame show that we do, which I'm really proud of and really happy to be back on, you know, I did that for about a decade and then didn't and been back on it now. And we try to bring some of those same elements that were working 30 years ago because they work, especially now with better technology. They really work. And lots of sound and lots of, you know, interesting things and an excitement. And the Daily Show is, it's the old talk of the town format. It's the old 1 hour, what's going on around Greenville and with ECU kind of thing. So it's really been a lot of fun. And, now I think the thing that's different in the last 20 years or so is that now there's stuff like your podcast. There's, people with their websites and,
right.
There's more than one radio entity, and there's the network level stuff is homogenized now, and it all sounds the same from school to school. There's no difference, which I'm sure some would view as fine, and some would view as well not so fine. Some probably don't care as long as they can pick up the game, and of course you still got the TV stations that still cover everything. So. You know, I think the interest level in what goes on day to day is really, really big in Greenville. I think you'd find it to be equally, if not bigger, in other college towns. It's a unique thing in the Triangle because of the three schools and, there's just no hometown team, if you will, in the Triangle area. So.
Right.
It's just a very different, the thing that reminds me kind of the way ECU was back when you and I were starting out in this might be what goes on out in App State. You know, it's the game in town, and there's not a gazillion outlets covering it. You know, there's one or two or three things covering it. That reminds me from afar of that. But that's the thing that I think is most fascinating. Is just the coverage of every team, but especially of East Carolina in the last 20 years, how it's grown for better and for worse.
Yeah, I think the amount of coverage is tremendous. You know, the funny thing is that when everybody talks about, I've heard this, it's almost like a cliche for me, we are like a SEC fan base. You hear that about East Carolina. You hear about the passion of the Pirates, the pride, all that kind of stuff. And having all the, I think there's a lot of, what I'm getting at, there's a lot of fan bases, or there are a lot of schools that would kill to have the coverage we have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look no further again than the Triangle. Not that they need any help with coverage in the ACC, and not that they don't get their fair share from certain sectors of the media. But, you know, there's not that dedicated, you know, group. There is a little bit in Chapel Hill, but NC State, it's not as big a deal as it used to be. In Duke, they really don't have the local stuff, you know, to cover it beyond the network level and beyond the TV media. You know, that's what's so fascinating about Greenville is it's, you know, there's day-to-day coverage of East Carolina. Some of it is really good. I'd like to think we and the guys I work with on my show and our station fall into that category. And then there's just the ridiculous sort of coverage and, you know, or speculative hot take kind of coverage. And the hot takes are pretty cold in most cases. So, you know, I think what we aspire for is just try to have good information, thoughtful conversation. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with speculating or telling good stories or that kind of thing. But, you know, I wouldn't – I think too many times the fan base wants to get – there's people who think we need to – it needs to be Dr. Phil or the Jerry Springer show or you know, Feinbaum. I mean, not everything has to be this hot take world that we live in. And, you know, that's just my opinion. Maybe I'm a dinosaur. Maybe I'm not with the times. But if that means being with the times, I'd rather not be.
Well, you actually, that's scary. If you're a dinosaur, what does that make me? Because I might be older than you. So that's
right.
Kind of scary. So,
well, you don't look it, Dave. Clean living and perseverance. That's why you look so young.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yeah, my thing is when people ask me why are you doing the podcast, I said nobody would hire me. So I had to start.
Well, you know, what's funny about the podcast, and I hear people, you know, I've heard Stern dog the podcasting world lately, and every comedian, because there's a while there I was talking and interviewing all the big comedians in the world, has a podcast. And
right.
What's so interesting to me about this is when I was in Florida working, I was on the air 2 or 3 minutes an hour in the morning, and that was practically it. And I came to enjoy and respect it, and it led to me getting some work with ABC, so, I mean, I can't knock that. But some guys you know and I started a podcast because I wanted to do more than just, you know, just the facts fam. I wanted to talk about stuff. And so that kind of linking up and starting to do some writing on the Pirates for a now defunct website. And that podcast led to me getting kind of, you know, getting back in the game, so to speak, covering sports. So that was, I think there's some benefit to it. And I think it's a good thing. You know, I mean, it's a way to sort of keep you, a guy like you to keep your hand in it. Because you've been, you know, at it for so long, and they're mainstream in a lot of, in a sense. I mean, are you gonna get, you know, piles of money? Who knows? But, you know, I think if it's well done and the people want to find it, and they feel like it's a good, you know, sort of conversation, except when you have me on rambling, I think people will find it and they'll enjoy it. I really do. So I think the podcasting thing, like I said, it kind of led me back into sports and blogging kind of led me back into sports. So I'm actually blogging on my own led me to getting a paid blogging job. That's what how that worked. So, I think that stuff, you know, has some benefit, especially if you've got kind of a built-in following or an audience, you can have people take note and people will maybe hire you out to do some stuff.
Absolutely. You know what the funny thing is? That I've always wanted to do a sports show. And, of course, Henry and everybody at back at that time, 94.3 and 98.3, gave me an opportunity right out of college to, you know, cover sports. And this is a way to do my own thing that I've never done. So, like, my own sports show, if you will. And this is an opportunity I've always wanted to do. And funny story really quick before we started talking to Pirates there. In the late 90s, when I was working with Henry, I saw a billboard. I'll never forget my favorite saying. It says, if your ship doesn't come in, swim to it. And I've always wanted to do sports. And I was like, well, it's time to swim to it. I'm not getting any younger. I mean, 45 now. It's when do I wait, 60 or 70? Somebody saying, hey, man, I know you're a senior citizen. Would you like to do a sports show? So
right,
I went ahead and started maybe I can be doing this for a while, but sports is like one of my number ones, if you will, as far as interest, especially East Carolina. So you marry the two in broadcasting, and here you go.
Well, I think it's interesting, the thing you guys do, too. You have a lot of former players on, and, I mean, I think there's some value in that for their perspective. But I think people like those stories and memories quite a bit, too.
Yeah, we're trying really hard with that, and we've got lots more players to get out. We had the nostalgia party. We had literally 50-some guys, former coaches and players, that said they would do it, and we're like, oh, my God, we thought we'd be lucky to get, like, 10. So it turned out well, and we still got about 20-some to go to get out. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah, we've still got a lot to go.
I was at the beach that week,
yeah.
But I would love to do that next year. If the timing works out, because I just think, you know, that's a cool, fun kind of thing, and I think that would be great. The thing that's really neat about that was the pirate ship that was on your set. Is the pirate ship with you today, by the way?
No, that's actually, I think that's Kyle's, so we've got some more. In fact, that was our first run at things, so we'll do a better job at getting to O'Cool's, they'll have us again. We're working on that right now and having another event. I'll tell you more about off the air. I'm trying to work on that, so I can't announce that.
Can I touch the pirate ship if I'm at the event? Can I?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get you. I'll tell you, we'll get you. If you come, we'll buy you. We'll get you your own ship because you're Patrick Johnson.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that'd be great.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be great.
Let's the moments we have left. Let's talk about the Pirates and your thoughts on. Season that easily could be, it's just one of those things that I guess is a good problem to have, but we could easily be 3-0. It could be, we're talking about the 90s, it could easily be a great start for the Pirates. We find ourselves right in 1-2, and you also have an Old Dominion team that comes in we thought would be a quote-unquote winnable game, and oh my God, they beat Virginia Tech. So,
yeah, that's what's really scary. They had two receivers get over 175 yards against receiving against Virginia Tech. And, you know, they really put it together that day. Their quarterback was the national player of the week, throwing for, I think it was close to 500 yards. They had a back that went for 130-plus. And, you know, I don't think they're defensively necessarily going to shut anybody down, but they showed a couple of things. They had some fight in them, and you know, everybody wants to talk, well, they lost to Liberty, they lost to this, they lost to that. When you really look at their schedule, Dave, and I'm talking about Old Dominion here, they got blown out by Liberty, which is probably a bit of an embarrassing loss,
right?
And then, you know, their next two losses were fairly close, including they had to play an unexpected Saturday-Thursday turnaround. That Saturday-Thursday deal is the hardest thing in college football.
Correct.
And they had to do it unexpectedly because of the hurricane. So they went from a close loss on Saturday to, I think it was Florida, FIU or something, somebody like that. I don't have it in front of me. And, you know, then they turn around and they lose to Charlotte close on the road. And not that Charlotte's a world beater, but I mean, you're talking about a team in themselves that could very easily be 3-1 rather than 1-3. So, you know, I think this, and granted, Liberty smoked them, and that's a bad loss. But, you know, I think offensively they're very, very dangerous. They're very Conference USA-like in what they can do offensively and what they're capable of doing offensively. And, you know, I think there's probably a little bit of emotion with that, too. I mean, let's not kid ourselves on the ECU side of things, that everybody, the players are probably a little more amped when they play a UNC Chapel Hill or a North Carolina State. And I'm sure there was some of that going on as well for Old Dominion, especially at home with Virginia Tech coming in. So we'll see. I'm anxious to see how Reed Herring's health is. And I'm a little curious as to why we didn't see Kingsley Effetti. I understand why we didn't see Holton Ahlers. I think the fans hopefully now have some insight into that. But if Effetti's really the guy that's ready to go, why didn't we see him other than Herring talk Coach Mo out of it? And
that's fine at a halftime. If you could see in the first series, he wasn't good health-wise. And whether he talked him out of it or not at halftime, you know, I think it's fair to second guess, and there probably should have been somebody in there. And, you know, I'm going to talk to Coach Mo Wednesday, and I'm going to ask him about that. That'll be on my show during the 5 hour on Wednesday.
As far as that very thing, you know, when we finally have the quarterback situation, homegrown talent, and we don't use the JUCO, grad transfer, you know, the Gardner Minshew. I have a family emergency in Mississippi, but I end up lost in Washington, you know, in Washington State. So it's I think it's a good deal having those three quarterbacks. And I think that Ifedi, I think he's a tremendous athlete. So I would like to see him on the field somehow, some way, trick plays, do that. Plus, I'm concerned about there's only been two plays for Holden Ahlers. And I'm not knocking Ahlers a lot. I love Morgan, and I actually like his talent a lot. He is definitely the future. I'm just disappointed that they need to have some more plays for him. That's not his fault. I just want to see more plays for Holden.
I think two things. I think it definitely makes you think that Holden is what would be considered third on the depth chart from the standpoint of would have to come in and run the offense. I don't think they have not brought him along to have him digest the entire playbook. They've said as much in so many words. And again, that's not anything that Ahlers can help. I mean, he's doing what his coaches have coached him to do, and he's quite the competitor and quite the athlete. You know, so the other part of this is Scotty Montgomery feels most comfortable running that Duke offense. And that is a running style quarterback who will come in running situations, a.k.a. what Ahlers is doing. They did that with
Sirk did.
Well, Sirk did some of that. Boone, I believe, did some of that at Duke. Right. And he went on to have a pretty decent last couple years for them throwing the ball. Condit, we had a kid named Condit, I think, that did some of that for them. You know, so that's the little – and as that kind of carries on, you'll see that develop a little bit with a jump pass option in there and with a little more creativity in the goal situation. I think right now that's the best thing to happen to ECU because they clearly cannot run the football in the red zone, and that's a big problem the rest of the way. The defense, though, my God, it's not like, David, there was this wholesale cast of characters changed. I mean, you got a lot of the same guys from last year. So David Blackwell deserved whatever they're paying him and tripled because, I mean.
It's the top 20. Hey, Patrick, it's.
Yeah. I mean, last year was just. The last year, yeah, the last 2 years, especially last year, was just painful to watch. And in this day and age, you're going to give up plays. I mean, you're kidding yourself if you don't think in modern-day college football a defense is not going to get, you know, hit up for a big play, a big gainer. And that's just kind of what we saw against South Florida. They, you know, they had a big gainer, and two of them. And ECU didn't hit their big gainers. And a game they certainly should have won. I don't think the team is resting on that laurel. There's no moral kind of victory in this thing, but you know, a nice thing to build on. And we'll see. I mean, I think everybody feels a lot better about 1-2 than they maybe thought they were going to. But, well, I tell you, every game, every week's pivotal, but this Old Dominion game is really, really important, I think, especially if they're going to aspire to get anywhere close to 6 wins.
Well, that was, you read my mind, that's what I was going to, I think the next 2 weeks could be very telling because when you have Old Dominion at home and then you've got a Temple team, we couldn't even, in the Shane Carden years, we couldn't even beat them. And I'm not knocking anybody, but I'm just saying they seem to have one of those teams that have our number, whether they're better than us or not better than us or even with us. And that's going to be another tough road game. But Old Dominion, do you think the Pirates win it, or how do you feel on Saturday?
I think they can win Saturday. I think they're going to have, you know, they're going to have to be able to hit on those big plays. And then a lot of it just depends on the true health of Reed Herring, which we won't know about until game time, to be quite honest with you. They will tell us one thing all week, as any coach would. This is not, you know, knocking this coaching staff, but you know, we won't really know until he's out there. And but I mean, he couldn't put any weight on that foot in the second half, and that was problematic. So we'll see. I'm anxious to see will the offense continue to sort of evolve, because I think the first half it was fairly decent, good enough to win. And defensively, can we shut down what the Old Dominion presents on the outside and what they present? The whole key is getting to the quarterback, and that's what ECU did last time out. They got to the quarterback, and if they can get to the Monarch quarterback, it will be an opportunity to win the football game. And then, as you said, Temple, with that going on the road for the second conference game, could be winnable. I mean, you know, Temple beat Tulsa, but Tulsa was awful. Yeah. And it wasn't like Temple, you know, was convincing. It was Tulsa was just dreadful. So there are – too bad we're not playing Tulsa. But there are plenty of, you know, winnable games, I think, on there, and games that they can compete in. They've got Houston and Central Florida at home. I think that's the, you know, right now the two tough remaining games. They're all tough, but you know what I mean. Those are the two that you might come in a prohibitive underdog in. And, you know, right now, if this team continues to stay healthy and play at this level, I like where they can be even against those teams because they have them at home. So, and then Memphis is on that schedule too, so let's not forget that because they're pretty good. But, I mean, there's winnable games. But you gotta get this one Saturday before you can even start thinking about Temple, which I would put as an opportunity game. You know, UConn certainly, Tulane. You know, then where can you scratch out maybe a 6 win in case that 12th game is not ever added? Despite what the message board morons are saying about Nebraska. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Well, Nebraska is not. They schedule Bethune-Cookman, so that's off the board.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just so nuts. You know, and you know, it's interesting. ECU could go that route, Dave. If people really want to get into this speculative sort of thing, because you can count one of those wins. So, is there a Liberty lost a game in a scheduled Norfolk State for the last weekend, the first weekend of December. So, I mean, is there somebody you could go ahead and maybe try to get on the books for that first weekend of December with an out clause? Because you could count that win if it were an FCS school. And an FCS school will do it all day because they want the payday.
Yeah. You know, NC State and Marshall, if we're going to play that game – as of right now, where we're recording this.
Oh, no, I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I just think the path of least resistance in that and the least amount of lawyering is to schedule an FCS because you could count that win.
Right.
You could count one FCS win a year, and, you know, now who that would be, again, I don't know. So, you know, is it, it would obviously have to have a little regional flavor to it, and I think that could be interesting.
It's going to be fun to see, and I want to give everybody a chance before we let you go to promote. I know the Patrick Johnson show is 5 to 6 on the game, Monday through Friday. And what about the let's promote the pregame and postgame for people listening this weekend.
Yeah, we'll be on the air on 94.3 The Game in Greenville, and that's WRHD on Alexa, Alexa stream WRHD. Or you can go to TuneIn, 94.3 The Game. 943thegame.com, Twitter at 943thegame, and then the 943thegame Facebook page. I'm at P-Man on air on the Twitter machine. And you can tune in beginning at 10 a.m. Saturday morning for the Old Dominion ECU game day with Coach Steve Logan, the Steve Logan Show.
Love it.
And,
yes.
What a great show. And so we'll have Coach Logan from 10 till noon. We'll have a PJ wrap-up show from my daily weekday show, sort of the best of moments from noon to noon 30. And then 12:30, Kevin Monroe, Forrest Foster, and myself will have our Pirate Game Day countdown. We'll be out there on the Elmhurst traffic island behind the Boneyard And we hope everybody will come by and see us. R.A. Jeffries provides some frothy beverages. If you're 21 and older, they've got those out there. We got some water. That's always good. And
yes,
we've got Nuke's Eatery bringing us a little bit of grubbage.
So
we'll have some food samples out there. So that's all that'll be going on. And then after the network coverage, Trent McGee and Big Eric Graham, Big E, who was a captain, offensive lineman back in the mid-aughts. He's great. Great guy, too, and does a really nice job. He follows the program very well and cares. He and Trent will be on the postgame show. So there you go. That's the whole lineup for game day. And we think it'll be a very good one. We really do. Are you on a motorcycle? What is that?
No, it's there's actually a car. I actually got it here to the gym, and there's a car. It looks like a, I don't know if it's a Porsche, but it sounded like a, you're right, it sounded like a motorcycle.
That was your Porsche. Now, wait a minute. What are you benching there, Dave, at the gym, or do you more cross-train? What is this?
No, I'm more in the – I am benching. I'm it's over 100. I don't know. It's not great, but I'm starting from scratch.
That's all right. Oh, are you – look at all the things you're starting from scratch, working out, podcasting.
Well, like we have
– It's like a second act. It's a second act.
Yeah, we have the what's funny is we have the friends that have passed away in radio that you and I have worked with closely, not closely, Curtis Media and all. And so I'm like, my God, they were in way better health than I am. And so if they passed away, then I better hit the gym again. So definitely I've got young kids and a younger wife. So I've got to definitely I want to be around for a long time. And hopefully I can do the podcast for a long time, too. So,
yeah, hopefully so. It was That's a great all that kid and wife stuff changes your perspective, no doubt.
Absolutely. Patrick, man, I appreciate you. I know that you've been working hard and you took time with us and look forward to having you again. And we'll let you know about the event coming up hopefully very soon. We'll tell you about that.
Great, Dave. Thank you for having me on. And we'll talk to you guys down the road and keep up the good work.
All right, Eric, that was Patrick Johnson. I know y'all are going to be together Saturday. Do you have a quick story on PJ you'd like to share, maybe that you can, it's family family friendly, so to speak?
I will say this. I think he deserves a lot of credit for those jackets he wears. I think the guy's a very sharp dresser.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. We've actually been friends for, hard to believe, I've known Patrick now for 20 years. When the first time, both of us were, I'd been in radio a couple years. He's been maybe a year or so when we met, and great guy, great friend, and friend of the podcast for sure. So glad to have him on. Eric, as far as the season holds up, these next 2 weeks, Kyle said this on our playback over the weekend, these next 2 weeks are crucial for the Pirates. We've got to find a way to win ODU. You don't want to look ahead, but that Temple game at Temple is huge. And if you're a Pirate fan, you know recently they've had our number, and it's, we owe them, don't you think?
I definitely do. I don't think we've seen us beat them. I know a couple of years back, they're like, are you watching the game today? I was like, no, we're not going to win. It's in Temple, and it's raining, and it's cold. We're not going to win, so I'm not even going to waste my time to watch it. So I believe must wins. Like you said, let's not jump the gun. Let's get ODU taken care of, and that momentum and history of getting beat up by Temple. And if we can go in with a 2-2 record coming off of a win, I think we have a better chance against Temple than what we initially probably would think we would have. And I mean, I'm rooting for this team so hard. Like, it's hard not to want these guys to win because I feel like they're trying so hard. So hopefully we'll be able to get past ODU, and I really want to win big. I want to win by 20. And that's just my whole thing. I want to win by 20, prove any critics wrong. Let's straighten these fair weather fans up, get them on the right ship. And then we got, what, 5 more home games after this?
Yeah.
4 more?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it might be 5 if we have that's a subject that we can talk about at some point. But we might have 5 more if we have the October 27th game, if we can schedule a game on that date for sure.
He's talking about a makeup game for Virginia Tech. There's a chance we may play an FCS opponent October 27th or either December 1st. to make up for the lost Virginia Tech game, which would give us another home game.
Okay, well, that'd be great. Can we make sure we choose someone that we could potentially beat? But I'm just kidding. But I hope we get ODU, and I really want to win big. Like, I want to put a gap on them. I want them to go back to Norfolk on their bus, mad because we just put a gap on them in the most disrespectful manner is what I want to do. I mean, Bubba, you know Benny Raindrop. We always say we want to hang a half a hundred. So if we can get to 50, I would love it.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. Back to reality, suppose, so to speak, right?
Yes. We got to get it done, though, man. We can get it done. We can do it. I promise you we can do it. Mark my words. We're going to win by 14-plus. That's my call.
14-plus. And does that matter? No matter who's playing quarterback, you're going with that?
I don't care who it is. The Pirates are winning by 14-plus.
I hope you are correct.
I'll take it. Hey. I wanted to ask you, Eric, your thoughts on the there's a reason why I'm asking you this. I'm setting up our next interview. What do you think about the, as a former player, what's it like for the entrance videos? Are those the intro videos, are those huge for you guys getting ready to play?
Honestly, when it's a player, you don't really see it on game day.
Okay.
You don't see it till afterwards. But, yes, I still go back to 2015 entrance video, and it gets me jacked up like I'm ready to get in the game right now. But they are awesome to have. I mean, they really are. It's kind of what you went to college for, the name on the back of the jersey, to see your face maybe pop up across the screen, the whole theatrics of it. That's what it's all about. It might not seem much of a part of the game to everybody else, but – as the players, it's such a psyche thing. Like, you know, I've made it. I am doing something big. My parents are in the stands watching all of these theatrics go on because I'm playing football. You know, to bring it down to a small scale, just individually as a player. So, yes, they do mean a lot. They mean a whole lot. I mean, I love watching them. My son is, oh, my goodness. He's word for word some of these things. Like, his tablet is, I just randomly hear him in the room. You hear something going on Pirates. I'm just like, yes, I'm glad he's loving it, you know. But, you know, they're awesome. I believe they're great for everybody. I have a couple kids that they lost kind of their homes during the storm, and I'm going to have them come out to the game with me. Man. And they were like, well, what happens at the game? So I just went to YouTube, pulled up a couple links, sent it to their parents, showed it to them, and they're juiced up, ready to go Saturday already.
That's awesome. We had a chance to talk to Curtis Thiemann, who is a – alum of East Carolina University, a 2005 graduate of East Carolina. He actually is now in Wilmington, where, of course, things are tough right now. But he actually is the creator, founder of Port City Films. He made the intro video, he and his team, for the 2018 season. And we had a chance to talk to him recently. Let's talk to him right now. We're here on the Sports Objective Podcast, and we've got a very special guest, very happy to have from Port City Films, Curtis Thiemann. Curtis, man, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We wanted to have you on because we'd heard about there was going to be a lot of hype for the intro video, and you were part of that, making that and producing that. And I have to tell you, man, that was the biggest highlight for me. I had to miss the game of North Carolina A&T because the Lightning, that was the best part of the weekend for the very first game of the season. So kudos to you. And because of that, we wanted to have you on the podcast.
Oh yeah. Thanks a lot. No, it was, it was an interesting weekend for sure. It was, especially having the game delayed to the next day. It was kind of nice because the entire evening when it premiered was essentially just that. It was just a premiere with all the ECU fans. And then we all went home.
Well, I look at it, I guess, as being a guy that loves film, so another reason why I wanted to have you on, I've always been fascinated about filmmaking and all that, and you're down in a great town, and we'll get into that in a second, but I wanted to ask you about that whole process. It's like a special screening is what I was going to say, but how did that come about for the intro? Because it's something that those of us that love Pirate football is something that's like a tradition, and how did it come about for you guys to do the film?
Sure, so... So let's see, we've been in production, been doing production work for 13 years. And we've done a lot of work over the last five or six with Heister Yale Group, who, is based there in Greenville. And one of our contacts there, Kim Reeves, is married to Brian Medor. And she had mentioned to him that, you know, I'm a huge Pirate fan, and had mentioned that we do good work. And so Brian reached out to me and was like, well, let's talk. Do you have any ideas for what you could do for East Carolina? And I was like, do I? So I was like, you know, as soon as I got in touch with Brian, I was like, we need to meet, because the entrance video specifically was something that's always been near and dear to my heart. It's something that is sincerely, it was on my bucket list. It's something I wanted to do in my life. And it was something that, you know, I knew could be, I don't want to say better, but I always wanted to see something more cinematic, something more, a little darker and a little grittier, and something that was just a little more Pirates of the Caribbean, a little bit more exciting than the animation and the different things we've done over the years.
I have to say, maybe because I'm jaded, Curtis, but it's like when I see the video, they're okay. I'm not going to say they're bad.
Sure.
I saw this one, I was blown away, and I'm not saying that because you're on with me. That's why we wanted you on the podcast to give you some love, because it was just it was amazing. And I have to say that most of the time I give it a little bit of, when I look at the videos, I give it a little chance and I watch it and I'm like, all right, and I'm kind of like doing something else. But this year I was completely glued to the Jumbotron the entire time, so it was amazing. Can you give a little bit of background, like, for the fans? I know that we could talk for hours about films, and you don't have it. You're busy working right now and generous to spend time with us. How long does the process take to make the film, and how do you go about making it? Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch of how it works?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can talk about this one specifically because every project's very different. But right. For this, you know, I came up with the general concept just the night that I talked to Brian. And I storyboarded it, and we pitched it. For this project, you know, typically you'd want a couple months. We had about 6 weeks. So, you know, especially with the I know when Comfort left, there's been a lot of, I guess they're just trying to figure out different steps. And I think the process was a little different than if you'd usually have an AD in place.
Right.
So there were some meetings that, you know, they were trying to figure out what they wanted to do for the video. And when they actually reached out to me and I said, well, you know, it's something I really want to do. I don't know if we'll have time because we're so busy right now. But, you know, let me know what you guys are thinking. And they were, you know, essentially they're like, if you can do it. And I couldn't let the opportunity pass. So we had to turn down a couple projects. We had to push some projects to September. But it's something that we wanted to get on while the iron was hot. So in this case, we had our storyboard, and you know, we did about 4 days of shooting. We did a full day here in our studio. We built where you see the pirate getting ready. That's the set that we built. We had gotten set walls from a TNT show called Good Behavior. We completely redid those. We built the room that he's in. Spent a full day, probably 2 days, just build, kind of set decking it and getting it ready. There's so many pieces that go into this. There's so many people involved. And I literally, as soon as we got the project, I made a phone call to every good filmmaker that I know in town that might consider working with us, and everybody was on board. So, I mean, we had really high class talent on this. I mean, we had DPs from, you know, the local shows that you see. We had guys that have directed episodes on CBS shows working with us on this. Like, we had really good talent, and it was because that they're friends and people I know and I work with, and they saw the passion I had for ECU, and I said, guys, this is something that is special to me. You know, I don't have CBS budgets. But you know, I want to put my best foot forward on this. I really want to knock it out of the park, and everybody came through. And sorry, I'm kind of rambling now, but as far as process, we did a day shoot in the studio. We did a day shoot Well, I'm sorry. That same day, it was half day in the studio, half day at the beach here in Carolina Beach. We did a day in Greenville for the locker room stuff. We had all day to do that, which was nice. And then we shot two separate. We had to do the flag flying. When you see it, the lightning strikes, I think it's a two-second shot. That was pretty much an entire day. The players that come up behind the pirate on the beach, that was pretty much an entire day, just for, I think that's 3 seconds. But we had to green screen them, make sure that lighting matched with what we would see on the beach. There's so many pieces that, you know, with this, we had VFX. We've got an animator in-house who did all that. But, yeah, I mean, it was a long process. It was pretty much 6 weeks solid of my team working night and day. I was probably at the studio until 2 a.m. every morning. So.
Oh, my God. You could not sleep in the studio, right? You sound like a football coach.
Well, I do have a couch here that I try not to do that anymore because I'm not getting younger. But, yeah, I did, you know, I did stay till about 2 or 3. And from time to time, you got to just go lay down and get your bearings and, you know, read some news or do whatever you need to just kind of bridge the gaps. So.
I want to ask you, Curtis, as far as can you give people like me that love filmmaking, how many people do you have working for you, and is there folks that could, I guess, help you out, or if they, I guess, how do they come to work for you, or like are there any job opportunities for people that maybe, I know we have a lot of people from the North Carolina School of the Arts. There's films there, different people that are trying to get jobs. So how would they come about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can reach out to us. An email to send would be info@portcityfilms.com. You know, our base group is about 4 people full time, and then we have part time people, and then we use a lot of people based on projects. So when we do a project, we'll hire our crew from people here in Wilmington, or if we're traveling, we'll kind of, you know, we have contacts in Raleigh, we have contacts in Charlotte, all the bigger cities. Greenville, we do a lot of work, but really just reach out to us if you work in the industry, and it's something that if a project comes up where it's a good fit, you know, we'll put you on our roster and go from there. But you know, on the shoots, we probably had a crew of 12 to 14 people on the Wilmington day, and then we had I think 8 or 9 in Greenville. When we were doing the green screen stuff, there were probably 3 of us. So those are pretty small, but you know, it really varies. In our industry, it's every day is completely different. You know, we do videos for pretty much any industry, you know, we've done just such a big variety. It just varies. Sometimes there's 3 or 4 of us. Sometimes there's 15 of us. So, yeah, it's quite a range.
It is, and certainly a lot of fun. Got to know, are you going to do the intro video for next year or other EC projects that are fans love at Pirate Nation?
You know, I've had there have been some emails. I can't really speak to that. I can tell you that I'd love to keep doing them. It's something that it meant a lot to me, and it's really, I mean, I hate to say it, it's kind of cliche, but it's kind of a dream come true when you have an idea and you put yourself out there, and then you have a team put it together, and then you're sitting in the stadium. It was so scary because everybody's quiet because they're listening and they're watching it for the first time, and you're just like, I don't know. It was so quiet halfway through the video. I was like, this isn't a hype video. This is a little short film, you know. And then just the reaction's been great, though. I mean, when that state of mind lit up. I mean, that was the image I had when we came up with the concept, and just seeing people light up when that goes up was really a special moment, and it's something that I'd like to keep going. It's something that I'd like to do, and we've still got, you know, we've still got some conversations going, so I'm hoping to do some more stuff. I don't know if that means, you know, doing the entrance video for a few years or what that means, but it's something I'm definitely open to. And I, you know, that's my alma mater. I'm a pirate through and through, and I'm down. So.
I will say this to the administration and the ward building. Please, 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 like Curtis, do it every year for the next like 20 or 30 is fine with me. it was awesome. I know you probably will get burnt out from it, and hopefully not, but I understand how that works. Like after a while, you don't want to like wear out your welcome, but certainly I'm cool with that. Before we let you go, I know you're very busy, and thank you for your time. I wanted to ask you, how are things down there in Wilmington? I have friends down there worried about everybody down there in Wilmington, and our hearts and prayers go out for you and everybody there, and not only New Hanover County, Pender County, New Brunswick County, all that down there.
No, I appreciate that. It's, I mean, luckily the studio's in good shape. I'm there now. My house is in pretty good shape. We've got about 5 trees down there, but it kind of hurts driving through town right now because of all the trees and all the devastation. There's a lot of homes that, you know, you see trees went through or flooded, and a lot of people are having a tough time, and that's pretty much how my weekend's going to be spent is just trying to help some friends and trying to help people. But I mean, we're going to be okay. We're going to bounce back. It's a rough time, but I think it's something that Wilmington, I know New Bern was hit really bad. I haven't been up there, but I think we're going to be okay here. And you know, I'll tell you, the most encouraging thing is to see all of the utility trucks, all the guys. I mean, I stopped and talked to some yesterday and thanked them for what they were doing, and to see all the people down here helping. I mean, it's amazing to see people come together like that, and it's inspiring. So it's good. I appreciate you saying that, and Wilmington's gonna be okay.
Well, again, our hearts and prayers are with you guys, and you know, if you need anything, we're Pirates supporting Pirates always, in good times and bad. And Curtis Steeman, Port City Films, my hat's off to you, my friend, and thank you so much. Means a lot that you spent time with us here on the podcast.
Hey, thank you for your time, and as long as Brian Meador stays over at East Carolina, we're gonna keep doing work. So thanks for your support.
What a guy. He was tremendous, and he actually, as you heard there, he invited me on a future set. So whenever they're making a video or film, I can sit there during the day. I'll take the day off from work and get a chance to hang out with them on set. So I think I'll be Hollywood that day and have some fun. But it was great to talk to him. And it's just amazing that, I'll just say this, not trying to be negative, it's just amazing that the previous regime, as far as the athletic director and folks' staff is concerned, they wouldn't let Brian Meador and the folks there in the video make it actually like a live action kind of thing, where they had more of a Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thing versus more of the animation. So I just thought that was interesting, and great to have him on, and a new fan of the podcast. So appreciate you, Curtis, very much, and look forward to his work in the future for the Pirates.
Yeah, this year's intro video is excellent. Bubba, is it true that your all-time favorite intro video was 2013?
He's been quiet on this. It's 2013's his favorite. Come on, Bubba.
That is false.
False?
That is
what's
false.
Your favorite?
I was going to say, now the one Eric referred to in 2015, Coach Russ' final year, where Russ, of course, goes through through his little spiel that he often used in the locker room. Now,
yes.
I certainly enjoyed that one.
Yeah, that was good. That was the only one under the Jeff Comfer, Shelley Benninger regime that was good. That one in 2013 was complete and utter nonsense, and it should be burned in a big fire. It was, God's almighty, it was terrible.
It's probably the worst, and I know I'm saying this, but it's because it's recent times, but it's the worst entrance video that I can remember. I don't know of one that I really disliked, especially that much. The other ones
were. It was a damn shame we had a 10-win season and the intro video was complete garbage.
Hey, well, maybe that's what we should have, a bad video, and then I'll have a 10 days again or a good season.
Yeah. I'll take the trade-off for sure.
Eric, I wanted to get, you said we get your predictions. I know in the last segment you said before we had Curtis, you said 20 points, or do you think 14? You think at least 2 touchdowns ODU loses by this week?
That's what I'm hoping for. And I'm going 14 plus is what we got going on here.
All right, what about you, Kyle? Kyle, what do you think?
It's going to depend on the quarterback situation to me. I think if Reed can play at near 100%, and that way we can run it and throw it. I'm with Eric. I think we can win by 10 to 21 points. If we're limited to mostly having to run it, I still think we're going to pull out a victory, but it's going to be a nail biter. If Reed's ready to go and he's actually healthy, I'll say we win. If we're having to play Kingsley and Holton the whole game, I'll say it's a lot closer. I'll go 27-24. But we win either way.
All right, what about you, Bubba?
I like the Pirates to win, get to 2-2. I'll say ECU 38 and ODU 24.
Wow. All right. So that was close to – wow, Bubba and I were close on that one. My first thought that I went with was score, so that's what I'm going to go with. I was thinking the Pirates 41 and ODU 24, so a 17-point win. So, Eric, we're over 14 points there, so certainly that'll be great. In fact, I think I'm just happy that the guys have double-teamed me here, Eric, as far as the whole Kingsley Ifedi situation last week. I felt like
that's
he should
not
play.
True. We did not double team
him. I really love Kingsley Ifedi. I think that the good news is it's a good problem to have. This is the best quarterback room, as I told Coach Mo, that we've had in, what, 4 years?
Well, I mean, I guess. Minshew's lighting it up at Washington State. Who knows? But
I mean, he had the family emergency in Mississippi, and he got lost and ended up in Washington.
Yeah,
he put up some numbers last week, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Hey, he's looked good all year. He's looked. I mean, Mike Leach's offense, you know, is predicated to putting up big offensive numbers, but you still have to go out there and execute the offense. So I guess this is our best quarterback room. Who knows how good Gardner is? He sure didn't excel in this offense.
Yeah, through. Well, that's the thing. Talking about Gardner Minshew, when he was coming in, when we, of course, lost somebody at the last minute, and then brought in Gardner late in the spring because he was planning on staying at Northwest Mississippi Junior College or wherever he was again, and hopefully winning another national title. And then we decided to bring him in last minute, and of course he took us up on the offer. But I was always excited about Gardner Minshew, even though it didn't exactly work out the way I had hoped it would with us. Through, what, four games now with Washington State, he's thrown for almost 1,600 yards.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's putting up big numbers. And when we lost Ben Kirk, he went to UVA and did good things there. So, got to quit losing quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to lose anytime soon. And I wanted to ask you, Eric, is the elephant in the room as far as Kingsley is concerned? It's hard for you to say because obviously I know it's not like you're like talking to him every day or talking to him or anything, but if we don't get him involved, I know there was rumors back in the summer he would transfer. There's always that possibility, I know, with college football, but do you think that if it's just Holton and Reed the whole year that he would transfer? I know it's
absolutely
hard to say, but.
Absolutely. I mean, why not?
Yeah, so that's what I want to get him. I want to get him involved one way or another, and I was talking about, you know, bring him in running because he runs so well, halfback option. I guess they would know that, maybe the teams, but if he's low on the radar, could we get steal a win or two having Kingsley with trick plays? Or I just want to get him involved because I really like – it's nothing – I really love Holton, love his dad, Morgan, and I've been a big fan of Reed Herring coming out of high school. And having Kingsley, I just feel like that there's just something keeps telling me to – push and pull hard for Kingsley. So it was funny you said that because I felt that way since Saturday night.
I mean, in high school, I mean, he threw for 4,000 yards his senior year, 40 plus touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he rushed for another 1,000 something. So once they was hit, I can't remember what it was, but it was like 55 touchdowns his senior year. I'm not, wow. And it's a big difference. I understand that, but obviously you know how to swing the lock a little bit by throwing for 4,000 yards in high school. And Yes, put him at receiver because he can run a little bit and throw a reverse pass or some type of trickeration. Give us a double pass or something. Do something with him. Don't let him feel like he's unappreciative and then he wants to leave and then you have an injury and then you're stuck with just one quarterback.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, but we're obviously feeling good. And I want to give you a chance to promote Saturday. I know you guys are going to be, as Patrick talked about earlier, back in the podcast, I know that you've got a pregame show to do on Saturday. What time do you guys come on the air? I want to give you a chance to so people can hear you, and certainly many ways to hear Eric Graham's voice on Saturday.
I don't know how many wants to hear it, but I'm glad that there are some that likes to. But I do the postgame show, actually. So I don't do the pregame. I do the postgame. So after the game, probably about 35, 45 minutes after the game, we go on the air. And we talk a little Pirate football and take calls from the fans and discuss the game. And so a lot of times we have a few former players to call in and give their insight. A lot of guys that are out of state will chime in a little bit. And a lot of the former greats, like Chris Moore will give a call, Jay Ross will give a call. These guys that stood out on our defense and to hear their input and how they feel about things on defense coming from a defensive-minded person, that's just wonderful to have those guys call in and talk and discuss these things. 94-3 the game. Just, you know, call in, listen in, post-game show.
Well, I know Kyle and Bubba, it's been great to have Eric on because that very thing, speaking of having a former player, it's easy for us to get up there. And being a member of the media, I have been for 22 years, and I know Bubba is a former college quarterback, and Kyle is Kyle. He's everything. So
I am a legend. I am Kyle from LaGrange. I'm a legend. Hey, Eric, be sure to tell your boss tomorrow you're on the phone with Kyle from LaGrange. See what he says.
I'll do that.
Tell Henry.
All right,
guys. I appreciate you, Eric, for your time. I know that we've kept you here tonight, but definitely appreciate you. We'll definitely be listening to the post game, and we're going to have a lot of fun on Saturday. I think we're going to see a big victory. I hope I'm right, and we'll definitely have more podcasts. Certainly, the playback will be this weekend as well. After the game, we'll record on Saturday night or Sunday, and we'll put that out to you. We got a lot of great stuff coming up, and I want to give the guys, Bubba, a chance for people to know where we can go social media. Where can they find us?
Yeah, if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @TheSportsOBJ. On Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's what our video, the entrance video from the North Carolina A&T game, has gotten close to 2,000 views, and we'll try to put another one up, and as well as other videos this weekend from the ODU contest and something else. They've just this weekend, when you're talking about our Pirate playback, we have a special guest, someone from that 1991 team. Tune in and you'll find out who's joining us from that 1991 Peach Bowl team to recap things against the Monarchs. I will give away that he did play on the defensive side of the ball.
Robert right. Jones, everybody. Robert Jones. Listen for Robert Jones.
I will say it's not Robert Jones, but Jeff it Blood. Is a big-time player for the Pirates. Eric, thank you so much for coming on with us, being our special co-host, and means a lot. Hope you'll come back on with us for sure, and we'd love to have you back on very soon.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to come back, especially after we win by 14-plus.
So, hey, well, that's about every week. If that's the case, we can come on every week. Four times.
I'll be available every week. If we win by 14-plus, you call me, and we'll talk about it.
All right. Sounds good to me. I love that. We'll keep a winning tradition going. For Eric Graham, our special co-host, that we also had Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum.
Listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.